Cat Mayo Hour.
Welcome to the Pat Mayo Hour, Week 9. Spread picks, game previews, survivor picks with one of us still left, so you're not going to get any from me. You're not going to get any from Gary and Thorne. You might get one from the hat.
The hat might have the a survivor
hat
pick, yeah.
The was hot fire.
Yeah.
Way better than you. I think it had more wins last week than you did in the previous 4 weeks combined.
There's a definite possibility. There was talk on Twitter of the hat possibly leaving me for something better. That was a scary situation. I love the hat.
The hat's been good to you so far.
The hat has been very good to me.
So as we found out, let's introduce the third member of the show, the man who is still alive in the Survivor contest. His name, Tim Undergust.
Tim Undergust.
Not my name.
Oh yeah, your name, pal. Are you jealous of the hat and how good it is at picking?
Yes.
So
clearly our game, but clearly the hat skill.
So the hat last week in Garion's record, 9...
Is that a hot roster reference?
Yes, it is.
Oh, my God.
Garion was 9-3-1 against the spread using the hat.
Using the hat.
3-5 as a super lock. The super lock was correct with Chicago, as was Tim's with Chicago. Mine was incorrect with Seattle. That brings you up to 46-67-5 for the year.
Comeback team. Here we go.
Tim was 5-7-1 against the spread. His super lock improves to 6-2. He is now 55-60-5 against the spread. I was 8-4-1 last week. I lost my super lock, so it's 3-5, tied with you for our best bets. That's never fun.
Nope.
But I'm 61-54-5. I'm pulling out to a lead here, Tim. Is it insurmountable yet, do you think?
No, but it seems like if people are smart, they should bet you for most picks, but then avoid your super lock and just take my super lock. And then
people
they'll
are
make
smart.
Money.
They're just going to bet the hat.
Yeah.
People love the hat. You know how people loved you before? You were the people's champion? The hat is becoming the people's champion.
It's the inanimate carbon rod of this show is what
it
you're
is.
Saying?
It truly is.
The hat knows.
But, listen, I give it up to the hat.
Well, here's the thing. The hat was too good last week. We need to pump the brakes a little bit. So I've added in a wrinkle, Tim. Do you want to know what that wrinkle is?
Sure.
There are two red balls. Red balls!
Oh, like in lingo.
Yes.
In
the hat right now. So if Garion does that, he pulls out the red one, his pick for that game, I'm going to go on Twitter, put out a poll, and whatever the people pick is going to be.
Still better. I was worried that if I pulled out a red one, I'd have to give my own opinion on a game.
No, we can't have that.
Whew. Thank God.
We've already
tried that.
Yeah, it did not work.
So the hat will be Garion's picks. I'll have my own, and Tim will have his own.
Should the hat have its own super lock? People are clamoring for the hat to have its own super lock.
Yeah, but we didn't even pick a super lock out of the hat last week.
We could figure out a way.
Maybe. We'll figure that out in the future.
Fair.
That's for future people to figure out.
Interesting.
So I like, hey, red balls.
Hey, right now you need red balls.
Hey, red.
Give me some red balls.
Just practicing my stabbing.
Hey, Roberto is on the wall behind me now.
I was checking to see if he was in the shot. I don't know if he is. I don't know if he quite makes it.
That's too bad.
Which is okay, because if you can't see him, he's probably just practicing his stabbing.
Stand back.
He's in the bank. Robin Little.
Before we get into the games, I do want to talk about last night a little bit. You know, World Series finished up. Great game.
That's not what you want to talk about.
It's not what I want to talk about. That's true. So there was a point last night where Tim basically guaranteed the Cubs had an insurmountable lead. We're definitely going to win. And then what happened, Tim?
The Cubs won the game.
No. What happened in between that?
The disaster.
You even started the tweet where you said the Cubs could not lose with, I know, as if you were asking for the curse to then
down. I was saying it's been 108 years since they won. But at 6-3, once Ross hit it out, I was like, this just seems like fate. And so that's what I tweeted, that they couldn't lose. And then people started, because certain rabble-rousers and agitators on this show started sending out tweets to incite the people. And people started getting anxious. And then as soon as Rajay Davis hit the home run out, I basically just had to turn my phone off because I got like 700 notifications. It didn't stop for hours. People saying, you did this. Shut up. I hate you. You know, this is all your fault. Why don't you just stop talking? Blah, blah, blah. And then it got to 8-6, the bottom of the 10th, and I was like, listen, I'm not going to say anything.
We're really skipping over an important part of this story. So as people know, when Tim makes these claims, a lot of these things become and are cursed. It is a real thing, but you can't go out of your way to ander curse anything. That's the whole point behind it. It really needs to be a true take for Tim for it to come back. Because sometimes he tries to, like, ander curse.
Oh, he tries very hard.
But that doesn't work. So what had happened is the Cubs were destined to win so much that to overcome the ander curse, God had to wash away the ander curse with that rain delay.
See, that's such nonsense, because if they were truly cursed, then Kipnis's ball wouldn't have slightly hooked foul, and it would have gone out in the bottom of the ninth.
Yeah, that was wildly foul. Like, when
it wasn't that foul.
It was. When you look,
pretty foul.
When you look at it on replay, it wasn't even close.
If it was fated to happen because of some curse, it would have gone out.
Yeah, but the game hadn't finished yet, and God was just like, here's what's going to happen. We need to go to extras, because we need to wash this away. If there was no rain delay, the Cubs would have lost in heartbreaking fashion.
Well, maybe if Terry Francona hadn't allowed that the winning run would have become a person who got on through an intentional walk, perhaps.
That was so stupid. That was one of the dumbest, especially considering they'd basically used every half-decent pitcher in their bullpen at that point.
But if there's two outs, I actually think it's probably a smart move.
Yeah, sure. Two outs is fine, but you do not, in a game in which you still have an at-bat, you do not put on another run for free.
No.
That was a terrible move.
I take no responsibility.
In a game that had arguably
You need to take responsibility, pal. Quit shirking your responsibilities.
Like, people were, like, legitimately angry at me. If I had, like, ruined their lives.
I do enjoy that you're on the radar of freezing cold takes now.
Well, only because somebody, I don't know who that was, sent it to their attention. But then at the bottom of the 10th, I said, and I'm going to read the exact tweet, I said, no matter what happens in the bottom of the 10th, it's going to be magical. Of course, you know what I think will happen, and then I put the Cubs hashtag in. And immediately I got, why would you do this again? What are you doing? How could you do this?
Yeah, but you're just trying to incite at that point. See,
no,
that,
I
yes,
was,
you
I
are.
Was
of course you are.
No, I'm not.
You are.
I have better things to do with my time.
No, you absolutely do not have better things to do with your time.
No, I sincerely thought that it was going to be a really good bottom of the 10th. No matter what happened, I thought the Cubs would win. And I was right, as I usually am.
I don't know about that. I mean, according to this spread picks, you're not right more than you're wrong.
No, it's just because I spend so much more time on my super lock than anything else.
Bunting? Are you a big fan of bunting?
No, I was just going to say, it's like you had arguably the two best managers in baseball, and they both did not manage well at certain points.
Oh, yeah,
in the
game. As soon as he bunts for strike three, multiple people, including another person on his panel, blamed me for that bunt.
It was your fault.
Well, I took the Bard would say, the slings and arrows of outrageous fortune about it, but, you know, no one remembers the fact that my tweet was actually correct. You know, they actually did win.
Tim loves a good bunt. That is one thing I can assure you of.
Yeah, Tim loves bunts.
Does love bunts.
I don't oppose bunts that result in runs or that have a good
bunts that work.
So if they work, you're in on bunting.
No, but if they have a high percentage chance of scoring a run in extras or something, then it's probably smart, but... No, that was not a good. But you never bunt with two strikes unless you're a pitcher, I think.
Or when does Baez ever bunt? Doesn't he just
Baez
hit
no,
home
Baez,
run cuts
occasionally?
Baez has no discipline. Like throwing him anything but a curveball in the dirt is insane, or something
or
throwing something at his eyes so that he can't hit.
Yep, sucks. One of the worst.
All right, let's get into these games. Atlanta and Tampa Bay is the Thursday
night. No
what?
I just wanted to make the point that there's no curse.
There is a curse. I'm going to see who you're going to be cursing this week, pal.
Nobody, because it doesn't exist.
It does exist. The fact that you don't think it exists, is why you get the label insane person. You know that, right?
Because I don't believe that 4,000 miles away from Cleveland can... Well, it's not that far, but anyway, like 2,000 miles away.
You don't even know where you are. You live on your own plane of existence where you just sit around cursing everything.
Is it like the spruce moose?
Like the people in Wink?
Yes, exactly. You live on the 49th vibration. Tim doesn't believe in God or anything like that. He believes in the magical power of color.
Yeah, you know, we don't wear pointy hats or ride around on broomsticks. Well, we don't ride around on broomsticks.
Tim is a witch. or a warlock, I guess.
He'd be a warlock, I believe.
That also came up. People accused me of being both a sorcerer and a warlock.
All right, into the games. Thursday night, Tampa is a 4-point dog at home. 80% of the public on Atlanta right now. I like Tampa Bay +4. Garion?
I like Atlanta.
Atlanta, minus four for Garion. Tim, who are you taking?
With these Thursday night games, I think the best strategy is just take the best team and eat the chalk. And so I will be taking the Falcons, who might be the best team in the NFC right now as far as I'm concerned. I think they're definitely going to get this game won.
Oh, sounds like Atlanta might be under curse.
It's a bad formula right now for Tampa. I mean, look, Antoine Smith could have a great game.
Revenge game.
It is a revenge game. I know. But they are so out on Jameis that it feels like it doesn't matter who their running back is. They're just more inclined to give the running back the ball than trust Jameis. I feel like that's a bad spot to be in if you'll trust running back off the street over your first overall pick quarterback.
If Mike Evans couldn't take advantage of Oakland, which, by the way, I didn't think he was going to be able to do.
In fairness, he won't be able to take advantage of three passes.
Yeah, well, whose fault is that?
Yeah, that's his fault.
Yeah, I don't think he's going to be like six in a better six. Situation against Atlanta.
And there was one throw where, like, Jameis threw it about a foot and a half above his head, and people in the office were like, wow, that's a catchable pass. That's a pretty good pass. I was like, that's a pretty good pass for Jameis. That's a different discussion entirely. That's still a foot and a half over your 6'6" receiver's head.
There was also a play where Evans had everyone beat downfield, and it was the same as Diggs in that in the Monday night game, where he was gone. He had five steps on the defender, and just quarterback couldn't put it in there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's tough. Anyway, I like Tampa in this game. I think it's a field goal game. I think they cover. All right, into the real games. Jacksonville at Kansas City. This is a 7.5-point spread for Kansas City at home. It's opened at 8.5. People are liking the Jags. The Jags, 51% of people are betting on the Jags.
The Nick Foles news came out.
Who cares? Is that going to sway you?
No, it's not going to sway me, but I'm just saying, like, to the layman, Alex Smith sounds a lot better than Nick Foles. Doesn't exactly drum up a lot of confidence.
They both sound real generic.
That's true, they do. Oh, like Barry Bonds in MLB The Show.
Yeah, Reggie Stalker.
Yeah.
It's a good creative name.
It's not bad.
Yeah, well, Nick Foles, he is comfortable in this offense. We know that. Like, he knows the playbook with Andy Reid.
Sure, yeah, he looks fine.
Jeremy Maclin.
Maclin may not play. He's dealing with a groin injury now. I saw that. Yeah, he probably ends up playing, but he sat out today. He liked Kelsey as well.
Yeah, no, it's nice. I mean, it's a small sample size, but he had 24 dropbacks, and his ADOT was 9.9, which in comparison to Alex Smith, who is at 7.5, you'd think Maclin's ADOT is not crazy juxtaposed to, like, every other receiver in football at, like, 12.5 yards, but it leads the Chiefs receivers.
Probably by a substantial margin.
Yeah, by quite a margin. So, he'll work downfield with Maclin and Kelsey, hopefully.
Yeah, and we actually have a friend who can't read, and he thinks his last name is Kleiss.
Is that Stoyloff?
Yes.
That is true. Yeah.
Man, I picked up this guy, Kleiss, so sick.
Yeah, it's like he's the main man, Omar Infinant.
Infinant.
Jacksonville, make the case. Jim, make the case for Jacksonville to cover this game.
Okay, I'll make the case for you. I'm not picking it, but I'll make the case for you. The Jaguars still have a top 15 defense. Like you mentioned, you have a backup quarterback playing. And his stats last week were up against the Colts defense. So, I mean, the Colts defense is simply worse than Jacksonville's. So, that needs to be borne into consideration. Like you said, Macklin's not feeling 100%. It's a big number. It's 7.5. The Chiefs are not the sort of team that you would expect to blow anybody out or win by double digits. So to ask them to win by more than a touchdown is a difficult ask in most situations. I mean, that's how you would play Jacksonville. But because the Chiefs are a part of a 14 teaser, I think can't lose this week, I'll be taking the Chiefs.
Does Blake Bortles' garbage time wizardry scare you with that half-point swing?
It ought to, I suppose. I mean, that's the only way you could possibly lose this bet would be if Blake Bortles has a ridiculous late fourth quarter when nothing matters. But
what is it, like 46% of his career touchdowns have come in the fourth quarter?
I thought it was more.
Something ridiculous like that? No, it's...
I would rather be in the situation of having to fade that than need that, to be perfectly honest with you. So I would be happy.
Well, Tim, I have good news for you, because the hat agrees.
Oh, the hat!
Kansas City.
The hat is taking Kansas City,
yes.
And guess what?
Oh,
I too am taking Kansas City in this game. Yeah, I'm not going to bank on Bortles putting up 16 points in the fourth quarter just to come back and cover the 7-point spread.
Oh, you should like Jacksonville on the road. Just great, great vibes from that.
Yeah, two career wins on the road for Blake Bortles. That sounds pretty good.
Arrowhead is such an inviting place for visiting teams to play in too.
No Spencer Ware. Like, do you think Charkandrick West can hold up?
We don't know that yet.
Probably no Spencer Ware. He didn't practice today either. He hasn't passed concussion protocol yet.
Yeah, it's fair.
So he's probably not going to play.
I'm just saying, it's not official yet.
Sure. So with a backup quarterback and the third, I guess the second string running back, they signed Bishop Sankey. That probably lets you...
Yay.
That's all you need to know about Spencer Ware's availability this weekend, I would think.
Yeah.
And they even worked out Richardson yesterday, too.
They did.
How pumped, as Trent Richardson's biggest supporter still, how did you feel about that?
Well, excited that someone was giving him a chance, but sad when they had signed Sankey and not him. Think he would have been productive.
It's pretty sad.
He would have been productive.
Pretty sad state of affairs.
Kansas City's looked really good since the bye.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's why I'm eating all the chalk with them. I feel confident with this team.
And all their defensive totals and defensive metrics are really messed up by those games against San Diego and Pittsburgh. Like, if you take those two out, and I know those are two of the eight games they've played, so it's a large sample or a large divide of that sample, but, like, those were extremes on the end of the spectrum. If you're looking for the mean here, they've been a lot better than some of those numbers suggest.
And Justin Houston will likely be back next week.
That'll be nice.
Yeah, that should improve their pass rush. Like, they've had such a bad pass rush all year, and they sacked Andrew Luck 6 times.
Yeah.
Andrew Luck likes getting sacked. Big fan.
It's a fan.
He's such a big fan.
Ha.
44% of dropbacks he gets pressured on. So we'll talk about that when we talk about the Green Bay game.
We have a great adjusted sack rate.
What's that?
Green Bay. A great adjusted sack
rate. Yeah, they're like fourth in adjusted sack rate, I think.
Yep.
Detroit and Minnesota. Everyone saw Minnesota get the crap kicked out of them on Monday night. We were all on Chicago. That felt pretty good. It was both of your super locks. So that was impressive stuff. Smoke and Jay looked all right.
Yeah.
Minnesota's offense did not look all right. Their defense also did not look all right. Detroit went to Houston and did not look all right. So this is kind of a weird circumstance. And I just think that, and it's kind of bearing out right now when I look at, like, the public bet percentages and how this is going, I figured that Minnesota would open at a big number and no one would bet them because no one wants to bet Minnesota this week. It opened at 6. It's down to 5.5. I bet you it goes down even more by the time Sunday comes along. But even at 5.5 right now at home, I'm going to super lock in the Minnesota Vikings.
Super lock.
Wow. I would take the Vikings if I were in charge of these situations. Like you said, Detroit looked pretty pitiful against an also pitiful Houston team. Like, at no point did it seem like Houston was going to lose that game, even though at no point did Houston really look good at all. And Minnesota, I don't know, there's some serious concerns, and I know Tim talks about this all the time. Like, they've changed their offensive coordinator. I'm not so concerned about that this week. I don't really care Shermer versus Turner, but it's the offensive line. It's just so terrible on both sides of the football.
If there is one team
that is not
equipped to take advantage of a bad offensive line, it's the Lions. They have the 31st ranked pass rush.
It's true, but it's not just pass rush. I mean, their adjusted line yards are second last in the league. Their adjusted sack rate is 25th. Like, they can't do anything well. Now, Detroit, as you mentioned, is not a team that will take advantage of this fact, but, I mean, it's just one of those, like, Minnesota could put up 27 points here. People will celebrate Pat Shermer. It'll all be great. It'll all be rosy. But it's Detroit. It's more about Detroit than it is about Minnesota, I think, for me.
If Xavier Rhodes plays, and they have no running game to speak of. Like, I think this game reeks of Theo Riddick ends up with 9 catches for 41 yards, and he leads the team in receiving.
It's actually,
like, we haven't seen a bad Matt Stafford game in, like, over a year. This feels like a bad Matt Stafford game.
And you mentioned Xavier Rhodes. He's actually, by Pro Football Focus's coverage metrics for cornerbacks, he's their third best cornerback.
Seriously?
Yeah.
Ugh.
It's just everyone they have has been so good. I mean, Captain Munnerlin has been playing exceedingly well in the slot for them. Like, they have really, really good cornerbacks. They have really good safeties. I mean, Tim can tell you about Harrison Smith. I'll let him do that. Damn it, I'm taking Detroit.
Oh, too bad, Gary. Although the hat knows.
I shouldn't be upset.
Plus 5.5 for Detroit. Tim, you hate the Vikings, so I'm guessing you're taking the Lions?
It's not that I hate the Vikings. I just think they're overvalued. And indeed, they are overvalued here again. 5.5 points is too many for a team that has trouble scoring to begin with and then just didn't fire their offensive coordinator, quit in disgust. This is a team that might actually be unraveling. This might be your last year's Falcons, who jumped out to 5-4 or 5-1 or whatever, and then barely finished above 500. I think the Vikings have just as good a chance of finishing 8-8 this year as they do 11-5 or 12-4. So this is a make or break game for them. I think if they were to lose this game at home, the floodgates are open, and you can basically say goodbye to the Vikings. And if they win this game, then they'll have, you know, rounded a corner. They lost a couple of tough games where Bradford played terribly. Maybe he plays better. Maybe he gets them back on the right track. For what is a pretty tough late stretch for the Vikings. I think they play Dallas on a Thursday night, for example. Plus, this will have to go into Lambeau. So this is a huge game for the Vikings. I think they're going to win it very close by 3 points, but that means 5.5 is going to cover.
I would wait. If you want to bet on the Vikings, I would wait until Sunday because I can see this number shrinking even more. Like I mentioned, 73% of the public betting on Detroit right now. Bradford's been better at home. Even I know looking at fantasy points isn't always the best thing, but at home he's averaging almost 18 fantasy points. On the road, it's like 10. Like, their offense is better at home. Their defense is better at home. They're a better team at home.
Well, if they don't play well in this game, they're done, right?
Listen, I agree with you. If they lose this game, then, they basically are this year's Falcons. I can see them, I wouldn't say losing out, but, they'll probably end up going under 500 the rest of the season. But weirdly enough, and this happened with Denver earlier in the season as well, Michael Irvin actually had some insight to this.
Oh, yeah.
He said playing on those good Cowboys teams and if you think that Minnesota is a good team, he said good teams lose in twos a lot. They're going to lose once, and then they tend to lose the next week too before they get themselves right and start taking it seriously again. And if you do think that Minnesota is a good team, I think they win by a lot this week. And I do think that they are a good team. And I think that their defense is excellent. I think Bradford can take advantage of one of the worst defenses in the league.
I'm just curious as to what version of the playbook they bring out for Sam Bradford. I mean, it's a question of how much faith Pat Shurmur has in him and how much faith Norv Turner didn't. Because I think Detroit's the type of defense that obviously you can dink and dunk your way down the field. Their completion percentage is at a crazy rate right now. It's set an NFL record at this point for opposing quarterbacks. But, like, they're a type of defense that you want to attack. And that's not something the Vikings have asked Sam Bradford to do this season. For as bad as he's played, he's not played well. He's still got an 8-to-1 touchdown interception ratio because he just doesn't take any risks. Like, they never take shots.
Right?
Well, they could. I mean, Diggs is a type of receiver.
I think they would be still better with Sean Hill under center. And I think they maybe should make the move if they lose this week.
I'm sure it's on the table.
I just, when you look at it, like, what does Detroit do really, really poorly on defense? Who can't they cover? Tight ends. What's the one thing that Minnesota actually does well on offense? Throw to its tight end.
And Bradford. I mean, Bradford, for his career, I think his touchdown percentage to tight ends is something around 33% of his career touchdowns. And you had T.J. Fedorowicz last week and reaped the rewards.
I did.
Yeah. But I will also note that Lions are a dome team, and this is a road-dome game for them. So that's usually better for dome teams when they get to play their road games inside.
Sure, but it seems like Minnesota's better at home, too. Like, substantially better than they are on the road.
But it's a divisional game, so as a rule, I hate to lay too many points with divisional games.
Okay. Philadelphia at the Giants right now. The Eagles are a 2-point underdog on the road in New York. With the Giants coming off a bye, the over-under in this game is 42.5. Interesting on the over-under. It opened at 44. 93% of people are betting the over, and the line has dropped to 42.5. I do think this is somewhat of a low-scoring game. Is Philadelphia still first in DVOA overall?
Mm-hmm. And by quite a bit, too.
Yeah.
What are the Giants? The Giants must be near the bottom.
Yeah, they're not good.
The Giants are...
I think they're like 25th or 26th, aren't they?
I'm trying to find them here on my list. 17th.
Okay, that's not too
bad. So they're around league average.
They started really well, though, so it is a long adjustment.
Top 10 defense, top 15 special teams, and top 19 offense. So they're one of the more balanced teams by the numbers, actually.
The Giants?
Yeah.
This is a tricky game. I mean, the teams that have been coming off byes seem to have been playing really well. And Philadelphia, if they hadn't lost last week, I think this would be a great spot for the Giants. But where the Eagles did end up losing in overtime in a division game. I think that they're a better team, and I think if they're going to give me 2 points, like Tim said, in a division game, I think they might win this game by 3, but you know, they could lose it by 3 and it goes the other way, but I like Philadelphia here.
I sort of like the Giants just in the sense of, from a game script perspective, and we'll talk about this from the other end of the spectrum when we get to Miami, New York, but I think that, not to say that necessarily the Giants are a great passing offense or even a good passing offense, but
better than their run offense.
It's much better than their run offense. Their run offense is so bad that they're put in a situation where I don't think they'll even try to run the ball against the Eagles. And sort of have how we've seen the Packers sort of revolutionize their offense and be better by having the running game just forced out of their hands and having to rely on Aaron Rodgers and use a short passing game as their running game. I think the Giants are a better team when they try to not run. And not running against the Eagles seems like a pretty good plan, because the one thing the Eagles do exceedingly well is defend the run. And I just think you can take, even though their DVOA is still very good against the pass, I think that a lot of that has to do with the pressure their front seven can put on you. Their cornerbacks are still susceptible.
Yeah, I think Beckham could go crazy in this game.
Yeah.
Get to the money.
What's that?
Get to the money.
All right, who are you taking?
I would take the Giants.
But you will be taking.
I will be taking.
No, you're taking the Eagles.
I'm taking the Eagles.
Tim?
Big Blue, love them in this game. I think it's a shootout, and if it's a shootout, Philly can't keep up, and Wentz can't keep up. Another divisional road game in the NFC East. I don't like that spot for rookies to begin with, Think Odell.
You picked Philadelphia last week.
Pardon me?
You picked Philadelphia last week.
I did, and they almost covered. It was OT. I was wrong. You know,
but he was the right kind of wrong.
No, but this is now the third and last NFC East Road game for Wentz, and I think he's going to lose this too. And I think, again, if he gets into a shootout, I think if I look at it, I think the Giants are the better quarterback. I mean, I know the Giants have the best receiver. I think the Giants' defense isn't that great, but I don't know that Philadelphia is in any position to really take that much of advantage. They have the 23rd offense by the numbers in the NFL. I just think it's an up-and-down-the-field sort of game, an exciting game, and in that sense, I think ODB goes nuts, and I think the Giants win by 4 points.
So you're with the public taking the heavy over then.
Yeah, I think I wrote it down as 33-27 New York.
Wow. That's a lot of points.
Yeah, well, I just think that's the type of game it's going to be.
Now, Eli has not looked... He's been okay. He's just not throwing touchdowns. Like, their red zone offense must be the worst in the league.
Houston's still
You would think
bad.
They've had a bye, though. With the bye coming off their win against the Rams in London and coming back off a bye, I just think that you'll see this team click, at least for one game.
You know who's going to give the Giants fits in this game? Sproles.
Yeah. Was it 62 plays to 8?
Yeah,
like the guy now.
But the Giants linebackers are so ineptly slow that they couldn't cover Tavon Austin. They couldn't cover Randall Cobb. All these like little dudes over the middle, they just have no answer for. And if that's what Philly's going to do, that could be a key to them scoring points in this game, is just move the chains with Sproles, with little dump-offs out of the backfield. And don't forget that the Giants seem to be horribly coached. And just because not running the ball makes a lot of sense, they might try to run the ball 25 times.
That's a good point. Sometimes the thing staring you right in the face doesn't actually happen.
Yeah. So you two are both...
No, I'm forced to take Philadelphia.
So we are both on the Eagles. Tim, you're on the Giants?
Yep.
Dallas and Cleveland. There's a lot of buzz going around the Fantasy Sports Network office. And this is the game that Cleveland wins. I don't think they're going to win this game, but it opened at 8. It's now down to 7. The public is still hammering Dallas, so there's a little bit of reverse line movement in this game. Looks like Kessler's going to... We don't know for sure yet, but it seems like Kessler's going to start over McCown.
Well,
I think McCown would give them a better chance to win the game.
I mean, look, I realize that McCown has played pretty well so far this season. I think this boils down to the level of trust. Almost like we were saying with Bradford, where Bradford's numbers on the surface don't actually look that poor because he's not asked to do that much. I mean, Kessler's only thrown one interception in his 5 starts. His completion percentage is nearly 15 points higher than that of McCown's. The ADOT is exceedingly lower. But, I mean, number fires metrics love Kessler. They have him as a guy who has been a lot better than Josh McCown so far this season. Now, again, small sample sizes, and it might not matter that much. But, you know, I don't think it – I'll say this. I don't think it matters either way. Like, I don't think my opinion of this game wouldn't change significantly in either direction based on who is starting at this point.
I would prefer Josh McCown be starting. I think the offense looks better. It looks like a competent offense. Josh McCown can make throws. Cody Kessler can't. Cody Kessler can't throw a 20-yard out. He just can't.
It's fair, but McCown, when he tries to throw that ball, sure, 2 of every 4 times he might hit that route, but the other one's incomplete and the other one's an interception. So, again, it's like a risk-reward scenario.
But with Corey Coleman back, they now have more options as well.
Yeah, that's fair. I just think that, again, I'm not saying one is better than the other. I'm just saying that it's almost a wash for me. It doesn't matter to me who starts these games. It doesn't differentiate too much in my head. And I don't know. Like, I can see the scenario here, Dallas coming off a big home victory in a divisional game, maybe, you know, taking Cleveland a little – or underselling Cleveland on the road. But I just – there's such a clear path here to Dallas holding onto the ball for 40, 42 minutes.
Like, limiting the plays. It's like people keep asking about Dak Prescott in fantasy this week, and I think it's a nice matchup. He's a capable streamer, but I don't think he's as good as, let's say, like Sam Bradford this week, only because I can just see 30 rushes from Ezekiel Elliott.
Although he's very Tyrod Taylor-esque in the sense that, I mean, right now he's only trailing Matt Ryan and Tom Brady in fantasy points per dropback.
Yeah, but what happens when he doesn't rush in a tight – what is he, 4 rushing
touchdowns? Well, that's the thing. He's not Tyrod in the sense he has the rushing yard upside. It's that he's a little Cam Newton-esque and has 4 rushing touchdowns. So at some point, that's probably going to end. And I think that when you limit your amount of drives, obviously you're limiting your amount of drives that end in a red zone possession. So that would be the scary thing for me is that it's a 7-point total, and I don't know that Dallas wants to necessarily turn over that many drives. Well, but I think I would be inclined to take Dallas.
Well, here's the bet in this game if you want to make it. The one that I actually really like is the under. The over-under of this game is 48.5. 95% of the people are betting on the over. This game reeks of like 20-7. Yeah. Tim?
I have it 21-17 Dallas. So this is a classic fade the public, take the Browns against the spread game. And, of course, Vegas agrees. So the game opened at 8. Now it's 7. And everyone and their dog has been betting on the Cowboys. So the books have an opinion on the game, too. It's to take the Brownies. So I actually think, yeah, both the under and the Browns, it's the only way to play this game, I think, actually.
Yeah.
I think you either take the Browns or you don't play it.
Yeah, I'm actually going to take the Browns. The under is what I like in this game, though. Yeah. I just... 8 points is a lot at home, or 7 points is a lot at home, but I know I just gave it like a 20-7 score, which would indicate that Dallas covers. But it's that it feels like that's
of game. That's a scenario, yeah. But not necessarily the highest probability scenario.
No,
like, again, there's a lot of this game could end 13-7.
Dallas's secondary is really beat up right now, and that's why I think Josh McCown would give them a better chance to win. I think he'd be able to take advantage of some big Corey Coleman plays, some big Terrell Pryor plays that I just don't think exist.
Do you think Coleman's going to keep... I know, again, exceedingly small sample size, but his ADOT was like 21. Do you think he's going to be more like Hawkins, or is he going to keep running these deep routes?
I think it depends on who plays quarterback, because
yeah,
you don't run deep routes with Kessler because he can't throw the deep ball.
It's true. Well, we'll see what the public thinks.
Okay. Oh!
We have a red ball!
Oh, the red ball. We can only do it once.
Okay.
So every red ball, you put it back in from now on. So let's tweet this out to the peoples. So... make Garion's pick for him. That sound about right?
Make my picks great again.
Make Garion's... we'll check in at the end of the show for this.
Okay, sure.
Tim, what do you think between McCown and Kessler?
I like Kessler better.
Really?
I do. I don't trust McCown, to be perfectly frank with you. And I think McCown, if he starts in the game, will get injured in some ridiculous fashion anyway, so it won't matter.
I mean, plus, look, if you're the Browns, you have nothing to play for left this season. We know what Josh McCown
is
at this point.
Yeah, I really disagree. I think this team has everything to play for until they get a win. And I think this team will be playing out crazy hard until they get a win.
I'm not saying the players don't have anything to play for. I'm saying if you're management, like, just see what you have with Kessler.
0-16. There's a huge difference between your team going 0-16 and again 1-15.
Well, we're not at that point yet, though. I think if it becomes like 0-11, 0-12, then maybe sure, yeah, put in McCown, whatever. But I think you need to see what you have with Kessler. Again, he hasn't played poorly, according to the numbers.
Yeah, there's no way Kessler's their starting quarterback next year.
Why not? They're the Browns.
They're going to be so bad, they're probably going to draft a quarterback.
I mean, we keep saying that, and they never do.
Yeah, but Kessler's clearly not the answer. He's terrible.
I'm not saying he's the answer.
I'd rather play Hollywood Hogan.
No, Hogan was exceedingly worse.
At least he can run. Kessler's bad, man.
I don't know.
You can't make that claim yet. You haven't seen enough of him to make that claim yet. He was really good in college.
Was he really good in college? Because I kind of
by the numbers, he was better than Jared Goff.
I kind of recall USC not being all that great.
I don't understand your point. I think he actually did play pretty well in college.
The guy throws like 15-yard passes, and that's all he does.
Pennington.
Kind of, yeah.
There's nothing wrong with being Chad
Pennington. You're not going to win in today's NFL with Chad Pennington. You're just not.
Alex Smith does.
Does he?
He gets to the playoffs every year.
Yeah, but he has a good team around him. The Browns don't have a good team.
Yeah, I know, but again...
a game manager is not what the Browns need here.
No, but if they want to build a winning team, you don't necessarily have to take home runs at every position. Maybe draft some other good players around him, and you have a solid to okay quarterback.
Well, they tried that. That hasn't worked. They need to draft a quarterback, and hopefully he's good.
Against the Titans, who are decent enough... he had 2 touchdowns, 336 yards passing, and a 105 quarterback rating. That's not if he puts up similar numbers to that against Dallas, whose defense is not great by any means. The Browns will be right in the game.
Played pretty well against Miami too. I mean, people love to focus on the Terrell Pryor aspects of that game. He didn't really do anything as the quarterback. He almost threw a pick. He barely got any yards rushing.
How many catches did he have in that game?
That was the thing. It was all the catches. It was all the catches, and he scored a couple touchdowns. But as the quarterback, he sucked.
Sure. I'm not saying start Terrell Pryor at quarterback. Tim, it sounds like the Jets should trade for Cody Kessler.
He's no Hackenkast.
No, we already have a second-round quarterback who I think will actually develop just fine at Hackenberg.
All right. We'll reveal Garion's what the public has decided on for Garion's pick later. We will move on to the Jets and Miami, a divisional game. Jets riding high, Miami riding high. The Jets are 4-point underdogs here on the road. The public likes Miami, 65%. No real home field advantage for Miami because it doesn't exist, although they play in the coolest name stadium in football, right, Tim?
Yeah, and they have played really good football at home. This is unlike most years. The Dolphins are definitely a better home team this year than they are a road team.
So let's hear you reverse jinx, at least try to reverse jinx Miami so your jumbo Jets can get the win here.
I wouldn't engage in those sorts of shenanigans. Never. I just simply give my objective opinion of what I believe will happen in the football game. That's all.
Well, it's here.
Which is Miami because what reason?
I'm going to take the Jets.
Whoa!
Against the number. I think it's too many points. Again, it's a divisional game. I haven't seen enough from Miami yet to think they ought to be four-point favorites in a divisional game. And, you know, the Jets will come off two important wins into the softer part of their schedule. They haven't lost a game in Miami since the 1st of January, 2012. So, you know, we've got that.
Let's talk about that game.
Was that the Ted Ginn Monday night game?
No. That was the Philip Merling picks off Brett Favre and runs it back for a touchdown.
No, that was 2008.
Oh, yeah, that was 2008. What's the January 1st game?
That was on 2012.
Was that the Monday night Ted Ginn game?
No, that was on Canadian Thanksgiving.
Oh, yeah, that was in New York. Yeah.
That was also in Miami. That was 2009.
All right, well, Tim, I guess the big question here is, I know you've looked at this, how did the Jets make the playoffs? Give me their path, because I know you've worked this out in your mind.
Basically, I've got it worked out that the Jets can be basically in a play-in game on New Year's Day, Week 17, against the Bills, based on the nature of their schedule. They really don't have any tough games left outside of the Patriots. And most years, they split. But most years, including last year, they split with the Patriots. So if they split with the Patriots, they take care of who they've got in front of them, Miami, Los Angeles, San Francisco, the Colts, the Dolphins again. Splitting with the Patriots sets them up in a situation
loss.
No, I think they might lose. They'll probably lose the game at Foxborough. But, you know, next week, I think on Sunday Night Football, they're hosting the Patriots. They're going to win that game. You watch.
I will.
But you'll see. No. They're going to win.
Well, no one's going to watch because it's a Sunday Night Football game, and no one watches football anymore.
Yeah, I know. You asked me their path. That is their path forward. I mean, just looking at the schedule, I don't see who beats them outside of one game against the Patriots.
You don't think that the Colts could beat the Jets?
No, that's a Monday night game where I think the Jets are the better team.
The Jets with their no secondary.
But they have a great defensive line who will absolutely terrorize Andrew Luck. You know, you give me the, you know, that, and that could be a game.
That's what we thought against Seattle, though. That didn't work out too well.
What?
Okay, but
the Jets' amazing D-line would terrorize terrible Seahawks offensive line.
Here, I'll read it to you. At Miami, that's a win.
Why did you ask him this question?
Because it's funny. Because he's going to be I'm just setting up freezing cold takes for like 3 weeks from now. They've lost all these games.
I was wrong about next week. So they host the Rams next week, sorry. That's a win. Then they're on bye. Then the Patriots come in to New York.
Guaranteed win from Tim.
Not a guaranteed. Then we beat the Colts on a Monday night. I just like that as a spot. Win in Santa Clara. Then we host the Dolphins. I think that's a W. Then that game at New England on Christmas Eve, that could be a flex game on Christmas Eve. I think we probably don't win that game. It'll spoil my Christmas. But then on New Year's Day, as I lay on the couch and watch football against the Bills at home, I think the Jets maybe take care of business. You know, that's 10-6. That's not inconceivable. But my main concerns are actually not with the Jets schedule. I think Jets getting to 9 or 10 wins is not my main problem. My main problem is that you've got three teams out in the West, and somebody has to fall apart. And so it would be a real shame if one of those three teams had something happen where they just fell apart.
It would be a real shame.
Real shame. I'm going to take the Dolphins in this game at -4. I worry that the thing that they do the best, at least right now, Jay Ajayi is going to have problems running the ball. But Tannehill has been shockingly good against bottom 10 pass defenses in his career. And this is a bottom 10 pass defense. They're going to be able to throw here.
He has a very, very innate ability to inspire confidence in situations where anyone would inspire confidence.
Yeah.
I mean, he's looked okay. Look, he's done what has been asked of him, which is exceedingly little the last couple of weeks. So the Dolphins have the lowest pass ratio of any team in football the last 3 weeks. It's under 40%. So, again, this is a situation of what is Adam Gase going to do? Is he going to make Jay Ajayi run into a brick wall time and time and time and time again? Because the Dolphins' defense keep them in this game long enough to reap the benefits of that towards the end of the game. I don't know. And I think that the way to beat the Jets, I mean, 80% of yardage gained against the Jets so far this season has been through the air. That's the highest rate in football. The Dolphins do have, according to DVOA and line-adjusted yards, the best run-blocking offensive line in football. It's better than Dallas's, apparently. I don't know if
Dallas's.
I believe that. I would take Dallas's too, but you know, it can't be ignored that not only did Jay Ajayi start doing this 2 weeks ago, but Mike Pouncey came back 3 weeks ago. So these things line up, but I'm going to take the Jets and the points here. I just think that they take away the thing the Dolphins have done well.
Oh, what does the hat say?
Well, it's true. I have to take the hat.
So you really want to take the Jets.
I do want to take the
Jets. Hat's going to take...
The hat is going to take the Jets.
The Jets? Oh, the jumbo Jets. Tim, you must be pumped now.
I'm actually more nervous than anything else. This game is actually, you know, I've got very little left to hope for now, so this game is really important to me. Well, plus, I hate the Dolphins.
Well, I just checked in on how the Twitter poll is doing right now. Currently, Dallas -7 is winning with 57%.
I'm okay with that.
But we're going to wait till the end, until the final one. There's also someone just left a comment. The first thing, like, my notifications just says, catching up on pods. Wow, that Tim Andercust, his take on NBA is ridiculously dumb. Hashtag cast.
That's nice.
Did we talk NBA?
He was talking about the three-point line.
Yeah.
Pittsburgh at Baltimore. We don't know if Ben is playing or not, but I think convinced Ben is going to play. It's -1.5. That was the line that you saw, right, Tim?
Yep.
-1.5 for Pittsburgh on the road at Baltimore.
Yep.
If Ben plays, you really got to like that minus. Do you think someone tweeted this back at me based on like a article I wrote like a year and a half ago about the week when Ben comes back from injury. He's never any good because he always comes back too early.
And he probably always comes back on the road.
Yeah, I think he does, actually.
Like, this is a bad spot for him. And like, I know fantasy implications don't necessarily carry over to real-world stuff, but, I mean, Ben has never been a top 12 quarterback in Baltimore. That's 8 games. And this season, the Steelers, in the 6 games Ben has started, are averaging a full 2 touchdowns less on the road. Last season, 12 points less on the road. They're going up against a Ravens defense that right now allows the lowest drive success rate to its opponents. Like, is a bad spot. I don't trust their offense.
Yeah,
that's the problem.
Baltimore's
offense is terrible.
They just find ways to blow games, too.
Yeah, they do. But I think if you're giving
me... They blew that Raiders game. They blew the Redskins game.
Yeah. I would take the Ravens with the points at home, though, in this one. The hat is going to take the Steelers.
Tim?
I like the Ravens for many of the reasons that were just expressed, I think. A slight home dog in a tough divisional game against a quarterback who's going to be gimpy in Ben or a healthy Landry Jones. I don't know. I think if I were the Steelers, I probably would play Jones if I had the choice. But either which way,
well,
I think the Ravens...
They do have the choice.
Well, I mean, if Ben says I'm healthy and I want to go, they really don't have a choice at that point, right?
Yeah, because people have to do what Ben says. Ben tries to get his way whenever he wants, doesn't he?
You said that, not me. I wrote it down, 28-25 Baltimore, and that's what I think will happen.
I'm taking the Ravens as well, but if I'm going to bet...
No, you can't ring the bell. The hat took Pittsburgh.
Yeah,
that hat.
The hat knows
Are you afraid, though? Because the hat knows.
No, I'm not afraid. The hat was wrong 3 times last week, so it could be wrong.
You know, your hat kind of looks like Wes Welker's hat in that picture behind you.
I don't have $100 bills, though.
No,
I wish I did.
And you're not currently on Molly.
And I'm not friends with Tom fucking Brady.
Why not? I feel like Tom Brady would be a good hang.
Tom Brady only has one friend in the world. That's Donald Trump.
What do you think this game, if Ben is announced as the starter on Sunday, what do you think this line is?
Oh, it'll jump up to like 3 or 3, 3.5.
I'm going to take Baltimore +1.5. I'm not going to bet Baltimore +1.5. I would bet Baltimore +3.5, though.
I would just take the money line then. I don't care. They're going to win the game.
Okay. Well, you should have made it your super lock. They're going to win the game.
No, because I'm far more confident about another game further down this list.
All right, next game, we're into the 4 o'clock. 4 o'clock games? That's terrific news.
Yeah, I don't like that. I prefer when they bunch them up early. I like last week was great.
Are you the only person in the world who enjoys that?
No, there were 2 really good 5 o'clock games, and then there were just, so that was exciting.
Five.
And then
stop
you concentrate on the 2
o'clock.
5 o'clock games. Whatever. And there was like, what, 6 or 7 2 o'clock games, and you could focus on various different games and jump back and forth, red zone style. But I kind of like focusing on 2 or 3 games in the late afternoon window. So
I just like when there's more games on.
Yeah.
That's always more fun. It's better for fantasy,
because there's no stupid London game this week in part.
True. New Orleans at San Francisco. New Orleans is a 3.5-point favorite on the road in San Francisco. Guess who the public likes in this game, Gary, and if you had to take a bet?
I feel like it'd be the Saints.
Yeah, 86% of the money is coming in on the Saints. Do you know what this game is, Tim?
This is a trap game.
It's a trap.
It certainly is. It's still not as good as your tweet last night of it's a tarp. I had a good chuckle at that.
I like imagining Tim just sitting on his sofa with a big smile on his face.
Well, I needed to be cheered up from the invective that I was receiving otherwise on Twitter. So.
The over-under in this game is 52.
Yeah.
If you think that this game goes over, I urge you, play DraftKings this week and play Colin Kaepernick everywhere.
Yeah.
Because San Francisco, if this game goes to the over, San Francisco is not going to lose this game by 40 points. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
No.
Like, there is a, and I laid this out with Davis on the show, and it's why I'm using Kaepernick and DraftKings, is that there is a scenario, it's not a likely scenario, but there is a case to be made that against the Saints defense, and if they do get behind at some point, that Kaepernick is in the realm of possibility for the bonus rushing and passing.
Sure.
He's averaging 75 yards a game on the ground in two starts anyway.
I mean, a large chunk of his points so far this season in fantasy realms has come from running the ball, which is more negative than positive when you really think about it.
Yes.
But
it's a great floor.
It's a great floor. I think Carlos Hyde plays in this game. I know there's some worry about the non-contact jersey 2 days in a row.
Yeah, I don't think he practiced today.
No, that is worrisome.
I would say
he didn't practice at all?
I don't think so. I was just scrolling through it before we came on. There was a Carlos Hyde headline either way. Damn. And then people were asking me, oh, man, do I start Carlos Hyde? It's like, it's Thursday. I don't know. Why don't we wait till Sunday and figure out what's going on?
I need to know now.
Well, I mean, to be fair, there are people out there who the running back they'd have to slot in would be something like Antoine Smith. That's a conundrum you have.
I understand that. But if that was the question, that would be a different story. The question is, do I play Carlos Hyde?
Right.
Or is Carlos Hyde playing? What the fuck am I supposed to know? Like, I don't get it.
You know things about this game. You know that Mark Ingram sucks.
I do know that. Oh man,
you were so happy.
I was. There's nothing.
I would say this doesn't rank up there because you weren't quite as exuberant about it
when Johnny scored that
touchdown. Johnny touchdown. But you were just so happy all day. Every series that started with the Saints, them coming on the field, and Mark Ingram was not part of that.
I had significant money on the Seahawks.
Yeah,
which
you
lost.
Did.
But I was still just very happy.
Yeah.
That wins out, just Mark Ingram being the worst. Do you think he starts this week?
Yeah. I think he has a good week, actually.
Then you should take him in DraftKings.
I will actually be taking him in DraftKings in a lot of places.
Although,
this is the week John Kuhn scores 3 touchdowns. So.
Oh, or Kobe Fleener rushing touchdown?
That was so annoying.
Tim, what's your take here? You do feel like it's a trap, right?
Oh, it's a very dangerous trap. And when you
as opposed to non-dangerous traps.
Well, I mean mouse trap isn't all that dangerous.
Just,
unless you get your fingers stuck in it.
It's such a trap because the Niners are so bad that even people who are inclined to sort of smell these things out go, yeah, but it's the Niners. But I have two words for you, road breeze. Give me the San Francisco 49ers.
We went over this last week, though. Road breeze is not a thing this season.
Well, I saw it against the Giants, and we're going to see it against the 49ers. Give me the 49ers to win the game.
That game was 2 months ago.
And the Saints covered that game. The Saints have covered every game on the road so far this year.
This is the first time they're laying points on the road.
Yes, it's the first time that they're favorites on the road. But they did go into San Diego and beat them. And Breeze played really well in that game, too. He played really well against Kansas City. I'm going to take San Francisco. That's going to be my pick, +3.5. If this line starts going back towards San Francisco and they're like -2.5 come Sunday, put all the money on San Francisco.
No, I like the Niners to win the game on the field, so it doesn't matter to me what the line is, really.
Okay, so we're both on San Francisco. What does the hat say?
The hat takes the Saints.
Oh, the hat loves the Saints.
The hat hates
I'm glad the hat could make the square pick, so I didn't have to make the square pick. I can say, like, oh, I would have totally taken San Francisco, guys.
This is going to look really stupid when the Saints win this game, like 31-3 or something like that. Because that scenario is also on
both
the table.
Both teams suck. I think it's like, if they win the blowout, it's like 45-24.
My Saints to win the NFC South bet that I still have going is back
good.
In play.
Yeah.
Not after tonight, it won't be.
If Tampa wins, looking good.
Yeah, it's not going to happen. Atlanta's a significantly better team. Significantly.
Yeah, but it's Thursday night.
Remember at the start
stuff
of the year?
Stuff happens on Thursday night football, Tim.
Remember at the start of the year and everyone laughed at Matt Ryan, said he's the fourth best quarterback in his own division. He's almost certainly the NFL MVP right now. So
like
the idea
game,
that
though.
He's the fourth best QB. So
I'm just saying, I like this Atlanta-Tampa game because I have so much Thursday night Mo. I've got so much Julio and Matt Ryan stock in places.
I mean, I have Mike Evans on basically every team that's not a keeper league team.
I like Thursday night Mo.
Yeah, we'll see how that works out. I have some Antone Smith shares too because my running backs suck.
Well, it's through just really no intent, but I guess intent was sort of created around the fourth or fifth round of drafts. Across most of my leagues, just seem to punt week 9. Like, most of my players are on bye this week.
Well, I mean, there's six teams on bye as well. And there's six, like, decent teams on bye.
Yeah. So this was a week that I was always like, eh, I might lose this one.
I got Freeman in a lot of leagues, and I have Humphrey in one league. So I got stuff on the go tonight, too.
Hump Daddy. Hump Daddy should actually have a decent game because Russell Shepard's not going to play.
It's a boat time.
Well, I mean, by good game, I mean he might end up with like 5 catches for 55 yards.
And maybe he can take a punt back to the house. That would be nice. So
I would figure he has a better chance of receiving a touchdown than taking a punt back to the house.
Punt back touchdown. Lost it.
Punt back touchdowns.
Tim is a special teams wizard.
Hey, he did predict that Nile Davis touchdown in the playoffs last year.
I'm clinging to it.
Who has the worst special teams in the league right now? Is it still Tennessee?
The worst special teams belongs to Houston.
Oh, Houston.
Oh, they do so many things well, that team.
Yeah. Offense is really their strong point.
Oh, yeah.
They're the also worst team in offense in the NFL.
Yeah, that's not a surprise.
What are they in defense then? Like, how are they winning these games?
Well, they're the third worst team in football by the
number. Yeah, since the start of the season, there was articles written by Football Outsiders about how they were historically bad for a team with an above 500 record.
What are the Jets?
Jets are second worst.
Second worst?
Yeah, they're 27th in defense, too.
Yeah. 29th in offense, 26th in special teams. But that's all turning around.
I believe DVOA.
Clear path to the playoffs.
I believe DVOA for everything except for when it applies to the Jets. You'll see, Garion. You'll see.
I don't deny they have been that bad. But, you know, what they aren't predicting is what I see, which is a big sweep forward for the Jets. You'll see.
You'll see.
You'll see.
You'll all see.
Carolina at the Rams. Good thing we were on Carolina last week. They trounced the Cardinals. And anyway, they were coming off the bye. Cam rushed the ball 7 times, and that's always good to see when your offense is predicated on Cam being good, the fact that he's running the ball and running it successfully. Good news for your offense.
Yeah.
I didn't realize how good of a run defense Carolina had.
They didn't.
But they're giving up 3 points.
I know. But, I mean, it's strange. Their defense, it's like a hall of mirrors. it's just so tough to get a read on that team. Even in that game, there was a point, they were up 24-0, I want to say, something like that.
Yeah.
And the Cards got a touchdown, and there was part of me that was like, they could definitely still lose this game.
Yeah.
Like, 100% still lose
this game. I thought they were going to blow the cover, like the Jets blew the cover late.
Does Arizona, Tim, you might notice, does Arizona travel to the East Coast to play more 1 o'clock games this year?
That is a good question. I suspect they do.
I was going to say, you want to bet against them in those games.
I would think so.
But that had, yes, that was true. But that was also a team coming off of 5 quarters from hell the week before on Sunday night. So like everything was conspiring against Arizona in that game.
It was rigged.
But like that game, and again, I think it was more about Arizona not being good than Carolina. I mean, Carolina got that fluky fumble return touchdown. I mean, they don't get that, they don't even cover, right? So. You know, Carolina played fine, I guess, for them, but that was more about Arizona not showing up than Carolina actually doing anything good.
This game is up to -3.5, right, Tim?
Yep, and that is why.
And that is why I'm taking the Rams.
The Rams will be my super lock.
Ooh.
Oh, wow.
Super lock.
Home dog. I mean, so I was saying to Pat earlier in the week, this game is a referendum game. If you believe that the Panthers are a good team, despite the way they played, that they're going to turn a significant corner, they're going to contend for a wild card, or an outside shot at the division. This is a pivot game for them. This would put them to 4-5, or 3-5, and give them a real chance to move forward. But if, like me, you believe that this Panthers team is fundamentally flawed, not that good, and not capable of getting much better, then for them to travel all the way to the West to play one of the very best defenses in the NFL.
That's not true this year, by the way.
The Rams are 11, so they're one of the best, and they're second on special teams, and the Panthers are terrible on special teams. So, you know, you take a team that's on the road, as a rule, right, defense doesn't travel as well as offense does. You know, I really like the Rams in this game. I think the Rams win it on the field. I think the Rams are probably the better team, but even if they aren't, I think they're certainly good enough to cover 3.5 at home. So
yeah, the 3.5 really does it for me. I think the Rams win by 3 or lose by 3, and that's both in the range of 3.5, so give me the Rams as well. We hitting the bell?
We are not hitting the
not
bell.
Not hitting the bell. You not love Carolina, Gary.
I do love the Panthers.
Oh, how great was Cam's outfit after the game?
Fantastic.
He's been wearing legit hats all week. He looks like Robin Hood.
Yeah, he's a real hero.
Why do you hate Cam again?
We go over this.
Well,
so
again, we saw it again last week.
Why? Didn't you see his hat and his Velcro shoes?
Sure. Okay. He looked cool. I mean, like, I don't understand the point.
Do you think that he looked cooler than Hard Rock Stadium is as a name for a stadium?
Yeah. It's real clever. You know, whatever. The guy's got a sense of style. Good on him. But, you know, that doesn't mean that I have to, like, gush over what I mean. I don't think he's good for football. And so, again, I don't think this is all that helpful. Whatever. We'll see if the referees take up his plea of, oh, everyone hits me, I never get any calls, even though the NFL even showed the last couple of years, I think there were 11 other quarterbacks who get fewer should-be roughing the passer calls than him. So, like, of course, you know, the self-victimhood continues, I suppose.
Hates Cam.
Does hate Cam.
And hates Robin Hood hats. It feels like Tim would wear a Robin Hood hat on the regular, though. I've seen your collection
I've seen
your collection of stupid hats that you just wear for no reason.
No, I wear Kangol hats sometimes. That's really cool. And, you know, I like the.
Who do you
one
think you are? Samuel L. Jackson and Jackie Brown?
By the way, people who.
You look more like Dom DeLuise.
People who like Samuel Jackson should follow him in the Thursday night game because he is great during Falcons games on Twitter.
He's insane.
Oh, he's hilarious. No, I have a Dom DeLuise. That's the type of hat he wears. Yeah, I've got that. I've got a pork pie, and I have, like, a Heisenberg-style hat that I wear occasionally. And, you know, I like hats. Hats are stylish.
Do you still have your John Lennon glasses?
I do have my John Lennon sunglasses, yes, which are also very cool. I get compliments.
From who?
Not people on Twitter.
From your mom?
No, from various people. I'm starting to sound here like, what's his name, from the Hangover. And the guy said, nice satchel. I get compliments.
All right, next game. Indianapolis at Green Bay. Indianapolis is a 7.5 road dog.
Big number.
It is a big number, and you know Green Bay did lose last week. 84% of the public loves the Packers. Love Aaron Rodgers for fantasy because all he does is throw now.
Yeah, it's great.
Fantastic.
It's amazing.
I'm going to take Indy in this game on the road. I can see them backdoor covering this.
Yeah, I think I would be inclined to take Green Bay, but it's just too big a number. Like, especially with the swing half point, like 7.5. Just a
Green Bay's secret cust.
They're not bad. They're just not as good as the public always thinks they are. Like, they're okay.
Yeah, they hung with Atlanta. They went on the road against a team that's just better than they are, who might be the best team in the conference, and almost won that game and had it, you know, down within 2 minutes.
And so, they did it with a running back whose name is Adam Ripkowski, which is much like Adam Ripkowski.
That's you!
They had no running game, and they went into a hostile environment against an awesome team, and they nearly pulled it out. So I think last week was pretty impressive to me from a Packers standpoint.
So you're taking the Packers?
Yeah, and they're the second leg of my can't-lose 14 teaser. Yes, I'm taking the Packers -7.
So we have Green Bay, KC so far. They're on the can't-lose teaser.
Yeah, there's two others that we'll get into.
Oh, we'll get into them.
There's only three games left.
That's correct.
Taking Indy.
You're taking Indy as well?
Taking Indy.
Just like me. This is a pure fade the public game.
Yeah.
Reeks of backdoor cover.
As we talked about last week, this sets up terribly for their line because Green Bay has the fourth highest adjusted sack rate. Indianapolis has the worst adjusted sack rate. But Luck seems to be able to overcome these things. As long as he doesn't fumble the ball and give them a free touchdown, I think they'll cover this game.
Yeah, I think they lose this game 34-27.
One thing to watch out for, though, is Indianapolis by DVOA, the second worst team in football covering running backs out of the backfield.
Uh-oh.
That's a problem against Green Bay.
Montgomery might not play. Cobb might not play.
Ripkowski.
would you start Ripkowski?
No. But
he
might score a touchdown.
If you're in a situation where you're playing that, like, should I start Carlos Hyde? Should I start who's the other one who has a really – even though I don't think Ware's going to play, if you're holding out possibly for Ware and not playing a guy on Thursday because of that, I would hold out if I had Ware and Ripkowski, or if I had like Hyde and Ripkowski, but also had like Anton Smith, I'd bank on the possible guy who's going to be awesome with the Ripkowski sort of.
Oh, I think the logical move there is if Carlos Hyde doesn't play, just have DeJuan Harrison play him.
I feel like someone's already picked up DeJuan Harris now.
I don't think so. He's wide.
It's such a good matchup.
Yeah, but people think Mike Davis is the guy.
I equate things to like how they work in our fantasy leagues, where it's just like these people are never available Sunday morning.
Well, because we work in a fantasy station where everyone just plays fantasy all day?
Well, that and also like Tim, just doing his thing, sitting on the couch, picking up players.
Having gig fits.
Cursing himself last week in the Keeper League.
Wearing stupid hats.
Oh, Gary, I don't want to say that it would be unfortunate if you lost, but that would give me a two-game advantage in our league. How'd that go, Tim?
I'm still ahead of you.
Next game, Tennessee at San Diego. Tennessee is a 5-point dog on the road. The over-under is 47. The public likes the Chargers here. 71% DeMarco Murray in his foot. He is limited in practice. They're already talking about a larger share of carries and work out of the backfield for Derrick Henry, who looked very impressive against Jacksonville. But, yep, you know, everyone in that game looked super impressive. I really want to take the Chargers, but I feel like Tennessee is going to keep this close. I don't know. Do you guys have a more strong opinion on this game?
I do. I like the Chargers big.
Chargers big? Why?
Yeah. I don't trust this Titans team to travel across the country. I don't trust Marcus Mariota to play good on the road. I don't think, I mean, listen. Oh,
you know who you sound like?
Who?
When I was in college, I did this concussion report, and I had to go to this non-contact hockey league and talk to parents, and there was one guy who was a maniac. A clip I'm going to throw to right now.
I don't think that there's a standard. I don't trust coaches, and I don't trust a lot of parents around it. I've seen a lot of kids get hit, and even some parents responding that, oh, the kid deserved it, he didn't have his head up. I don't want my son around that kind of environment.
I don't trust coaches.
See,
I even put on an effect where he was like black and white and slowed down to make him look even crazier.
When you said college, I assumed you meant like a reputable college.
Oh, you mean yeah, that would be university.
Yeah, and then I was like, oh, I know exactly what you're talking about. That's not a good sign.
No, that was the first feature I ever cut.
You know what was that? Oh, I hated that so much. That was such a biased assignment. Because like us as reasonable human beings who hate hockey didn't have all these like, oh man, my cousin is a fourth liner on the Thrashers. Oh, I can get some hockey interviews that way.
Yeah,
I don't have any hockey connections.
If your cousin played in the NHL, you would have some good connections.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, Gary and I did not have that luxury.
Yeah, we did not have connections.
We had to go to a non-contact hockey league and talk to really pious parents about concussions.
That sounds like a color me there.
But they didn't trust the coaches because they weren't looking out for the best interest of the kids when you play in contact hockey.
Okay.
Yeah. Reasonable.
I'm taking Tennessee on the road. I just think they keep this within three. I think they can slow it down. Garion is taking San Diego.
And I approve of this pick.
You approve this message?
I have been so bad with Tennessee all year long. I give their defense too much credit sometimes. I give their offense too little credit sometimes. I just think San Diego's a good team.
Is this the referendum game for San Diego?
Well, yes. November 8th. Yeah, Tuesday is the vote.
Tuesday is the vote.
I have a pet theory on why I think that's going to pass, too.
Why?
Because San Diego is a very heavily military city, and it's one of the few cities in California which is quite Republican. I think a lot of voters are going to be so depressed to either have to go vote for Donald or vote for Hillary instead that they'll need to cheer themselves up in some way. And the way in which they will cheer themselves up is they will vote yes on the referendum.
Feinberg approves.
So will that deport Apu, or can he stay? The Nye Mets are my favorite squadron.
People love the Chargers.
Chargers also the third leg of that can't miss teaser.
All right, so Green Bay, San Diego, and the Chiefs all on a teaser. So next game, we have Denver at Oakland. This game is at a pick'em. It is a Sunday night game. And as I've now figured out Oakland's, what they're up to, the Oaklands, the Raiders of Oaklands, they cover games on the road and don't cover at home. I'll take Denver.
Also, I'll say this. Even though it was awesome for fantasy purposes that Oakland took it upon themselves to create longer fields, perpetually longer fields for Derek Carr to set records on, you're not going to be converting a lot of 3rd and 24s against Denver. That's not how this works. Aqib Talib and Chris Harris are both...
Is Talib going to play this week?
Well, that's up in the air. But if Talib plays, they are two of the top three cornerbacks, according to Pro Football Focus's metrics, for coverage. I
like Crabtree in fantasy. I hate Cooper.
Crabtree!
I would take Denver, but of course, I side with my smarter friend, and he will take Oakland.
Oh, Garion's on Oakland. Tim, I know you're going to take Oakland.
I want to take Denver because I don't think the Raiders are that good.
Are you
at
just
home.
So much are too tired of taking abuse on Twitter? You're gonna just like take please. The coward's
you
way out.
You can't handle after the Cubs game and all the vitriol spewed your way. You just can't handle the angry Raiders fans.
No,
I mean, you picked against the Vikings again too. Everyone's gonna be mad at you.
Yeah, well, come at me. I have a very thick skin. People don't like what I have to say. Unfollow me. Like, you know, I'm not worried about that. You know, this is a – I mean, it's a pick'em game. Who do I think is going to win? Ultimately,
you think Denver's going to win. I can hear it in your voice.
I know, but
there's so much pain.
I don't want them to.
One of these – oh, is this the team in the West that you wish would just if something happened to them and they happened to fall apart?
Well, I think the team most likely to fall apart is Denver because of their quarterback situation, I think, is – you know, is the worst of the three, the Chiefs, Broncos.
Agreed.
And,
I would say Bronco, so.
And, of course, that's such an important position that if that goes sideways, everything else goes sideways.
Wait, what's an important NFL position, Tim?
The quarterback
position. No, I had not heard that.
So I think they could slide the most. Listen, I'm going to take the Raiders. I don't like the pick, but I want the Raiders to win. Give me the Raiders.
That's such a terrible way to do it.
Ultimately, the hat broke the tie for me.
Oh, well, I can't disagree with that.
Monday Night Football, Buffalo at Seattle. This should be a fun Monday night game. LeSean McCoy, who knows?
Yeah.
Who knows if he's playing?
Best part of this game will be halftime when Berman interviews Hillary and Trump, and I just see what they have to say about football.
Is that actually happening?
It happens every 4 years on the Monday before the election. And they have the candidates on.
They're allowing Berman to do that still?
God.
They do every year. I mean, this is last year. I mean, I remember 4 years ago when Romney came on and wanted credit for all those Patriots Super Bowls. It was funny. I mean, I would just ask Hillary what team is she cheering for this week and see which one she comes up with.
What do you think
Trump's favorite team is?
The Bills.
Well, I don't know. She grew up and she no, Trump's probably a Giants fan. That's just my hunch.
You just don't want him to be a Jets fan.
Oh, I don't care. I mean, Woody Johnson owns the Jets, and he and Woody Johnson ran Jeb Bush's campaign on the finance side, so I'm sure he hates the Jets for that reason. And he probably hates the Bills because he didn't buy them because the Bills are losers. So, my guess is that he's a Giants fan. I could be wrong, but, I mean, Hillary could probably claim to be a Bears fan because that's where she's from, well, used to be from. But then she likes to lie and say she's from Arkansas, so maybe she's a Falcons fan. But then she likes to lie and say she's from New York, so maybe she's a Jets fan. I don't know.
I hope Donald Trump just...
That would be the worst.
I hope he just spends the entire time talking about how he still thinks there's a good chance that the American Football League, or not the American Football League, the USFL, could have really beat out the NFL if he'd been given a chance.
He did win that lawsuit.
He sold it down the river.
He did win that lawsuit. I mean... So I think that's the most interesting part of this game is to see what their interview will be. I assume it'll happen. It always happens every 4 years, so I assume it'll happen again.
With Berman, I thought he was interviewing Jim Kelly this week.
No, he interviewed Jim Kelly last week.
Oh, was it?
And then Jim Kelly was like, I got a surprise Halloween costume, and it was just him in hunting garb.
Like Jared Allen?
I think we know which way Jim Kelly is going to vote. Just a hunt.
Yeah, there's some pretty clear indications on that one.
So Buffalo is a 7-point dog at Seattle. Seattle's not covering them. I mean, they've covered the big spread at home against San Francisco.
Well, they don't score touchdowns. And as Tim was saying, I'm going to follow him along here. Quarterback's a very important position in the NFL. Touchdowns are important to covering games. So that's been an issue.
What's the new guy on Monday Night Football? Not Tirico. Sean McDonough?
Sean McDonough, yeah.
Yeah. Sean, let me tell you about the game. You got to score points if you're going to win in the NFL. And I'm just not seeing that from Seattle right now. I don't do a good Gruden.
It's not bad.
Mikey O does a good Gruden.
Here's a guy.
Can you go get Mikey? Put it on the two and go get Mikey O. I need to hear his Gruden.
Hopefully he's there.
He's definitely, unless he's at lunch, which he always is.
Both Seattle and Buffalo have so many grinders.
They do have a lot of grinders.
A lot of grinders.
Tyrod Taylor, captain of this team,
McDonough,
grinds. And McDonough's just like, he is what he is. He's a good announcer.
Well, I mean, he's most famous, right, for calling the Joe Carter home run. So to hear him do football, on the Monday night's pretty interesting.
I like Tirico, though, too.
I like but Tirico's back in his element. He's doing a lot of golf.
Yeah.
Which is really key. Is Mikey not there?
He's
going to hire Tirico.
Oh, he's coming out of the studio right now. So who are you taking in this game, by the way?
The Seahawks are the fourth part of my can't lose teaser, and I'll be... taking the Seahawks, and the Seahawks are also my suicide pick this week.
Oh, crap. I have to super lock in this game.
Yeah.
I think next week I'm going to put more stars on the balls. This is not a – I don't like my super locks being multiple
games. What if it wins again?
I don't know. Please be a home team. Oh, it's the red ball.
Oh, you got to go again. You need a new one.
Yes, Seattle.
Super lock.
Seattle
will be my super lock.
Seattle is your super lock?
Actually, that was the super lock ball.
That was the super lock ball. So, Mikey, I was trying to do my Gruden impression, and it was not good. So, let's hear some Gruden impression. Let's give us your take on some of the grinders in the Bills and Seahawks game.
Nice. On the spot. I got a good Tampa. Can I do a Tampa one?
Yeah, do a Tampa one.
A Tampa, because, you know, when I talk about the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, man, you know what I like to call these teams, man? I like to call them the Redwood National Park Monsters, man. You know why I call it that? I call it because you ever been to Redwood National Park, man? The tallest trees in the world. That's where you got all these Tampa Bay Buccaneers, man. Everyone's 6'5". You know, we got Vincent Jackson. He's out now. But Mike Evans, 6'5". Jameis Winston, this guy should have 40 touchdowns, man. Throw up the ball to Mike Evans. I don't know how these guys don't cover this game tonight.
That is so good.
That was excellent. Thanks, Mikey.
No problem. Let's go, Bucks.
Mikey, where can people follow you on Twitter?
At Mike Omelan.
Spell Omelan for people?
Yeah, Omelan.
You had to think about that, didn't you?
Yeah.
That was good, huh?
Yeah.
Oh, man, that's fantastic. It's even better than some of my impressions.
It doesn't beat your Walken.
Yeah, your Christopher Walken's on point.
You should give us a sample of that right now.
No. You don't want to go to that well too many times.
Well,
stops being fun.
Can we at least hear your Snagglepuss impression?
Oh, heavens to Murgatroy, I'm the king of the jungle.
That's actually not bad, though.
Snagglepuss is
that was an easy one.
It's all about cadence when it comes down to Snagglepuss. Oh,
yeah. Not like
exit, stage right.
See, Marvin the Martian's much harder to do.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, it's true.
This makes me... I used to be able to do it, too. This makes me very angry.
Not bad.
It used to be a lot better. I haven't done it in a while.
I used to do Cartman pretty well, but I don't know if I can still do it.
Was it when you were fatter?
Yeah, no, it really sold the voice. Yeah. There's a certain amount of fat that gets caught in your throat. It's very crucial to get the Cartman down.
Hey!
Not fat. Just big bones.
Round of impressions leads to a round of Seahawks.
There we go.
On Monday night. And Gary, this is your super lock?
Apparently.
All right. -7 it is. All right. They'll do it on the Pat Mayo Hour. Tim, did you come up with, like, freelance topics we can get into?
I mean, I have a list of the... I mean, I still have the thing we didn't talk about last week. There was the whole conversation you and I had one night that we never fleshed out about the theory we had of superstars. Remember that?
Like the TV show Superstars or Pro Stars with Wayne Gretzky, Bo Jackson, and Michael Jordan?
That would actually probably be a more fun conversation.
So give me the three topics you have written down.
So I had that Saturday night one.
Can you repeat what it is for the people?
Oh yeah,
please?
Sorry. So I had a point down about whether Saturday Night Live is still any good. Is it back to a golden age? Is it out of a? Do we just come out of one? What constitutes funniness on Saturday Night Live? I have my opinions on it. So that was one of the points I had. The second point I had was sort of a literary.
So what you're saying is that you think Saturday Night Live is great, and you're wondering that if we have any questions.
Don't think it's good right now. I think it just left a golden age, and
Tim thinks that anything left leaning is not funny.
That isn't true.
Yes, it is true. It's why hate every comedy show on TV now.
No, that's not true. I used to like, for example, when even though I thought Stewart was kind of pedantic, I thought he was relatively funny when he did the Daily Show. That's back when there were people on the show that didn't bomb on a nightly basis. But
you have never watched the Trevor Noah Daily Show, so you don't know.
No, you haven't. Not funny. He's not funny.
But you still never watched it. You admitted the other night you had never seen an episode.
I never said anything. I have watched a couple of episodes. In fact, when he first got the gig, I gave him like a week. And I was like, what am I doing? I'm not going to watch something that's marginally funny at best. I tried to watch that Samantha Bee show. I don't like being screamed at for 15 straight minutes. That doesn't appeal to me. I like to laugh. I don't like to be lectured. So that show's not funny. The This Week Tonight is the exact same jokes every single week, just recycled with, again, some sort of radical progressive sermon that if you don't believe in, you're a horrible human being. I remember.
Funny.
Yeah.
It can be funny, but it can also be needlessly preachy. I mean, I remember several weeks ago, several months ago, he had the whole section about abortion. And basically, if you didn't fit his narrow restraints of what considered abortion, you were subhuman in his mind, essentially. And so, like, I found that troubling. I guess HBO doesn't care, right? The HBO they don't care whether you watch or not. They just want you to own the package. It's like satellite radio in that sense. But so this week tonight can be funny at points, but it's usually just preachy. Larry Wilmore got thrown off the air because he's, and well, if you can believe it, a worse version of Trevor Noah, if such a thing is possible, because, again, he's awful and not funny. I think Stephen Colbert, currently on the CBS Nightly Show, sure, he leans left, but I actually think he's funny. I think he tells funny jokes.
Rush Limbaugh.
I actually do like Rush. I've always kind of liked Rush. I mean, Rush has been a little bit nihilistic the last few months for my tastes, in the sense that he actually has conservative beliefs that Trump, of course, stands against, but he's backing Trump because Trump is like a heat-seeking missile that will blow up Washington in a way he wants. So like that has troubled me a little bit. But for the most part, I've always kind of liked what Rush is up to. I think he's a pretty smart and clever guy. But like, Howard Stern definitely leans left. I think Howard Stern's very funny.
Yeah, I think everyone likes Howard Stern.
Okay, well then your accusation that anything that leans left I don't like isn't true.
Well, just, I mean, you've given like an outlier example.
Just for the most part, I don't enjoy ugly progressive, you know, dogmatism mixed into my comedy. I'm sorry. I guess I'm not that way.
So let's talk about SNL then. SNL right now.
Sure. I mean, the broad question I had was whether it's still good, whether we had just left a golden age. You know, are there such thing as golden ages, or is it possible to even know when we're in a good age, or can we only know this in retrospect?
I think it doesn't work in retrospect at all.
I think it does work in retrospect, because a lot of the people that will emerge from a certain cast, you'll remember those years far more fondly than maybe you did at the time because of it. Like when Will Ferrell was on,
yeah,
everyone kind of realized he was good. But the Phil Hartman years as well were all still really good.
But I don't think it's a good way to gauge the show itself based upon who were the stars that emerged. I mean, again, it's comedy's an ever-fluctuating thing. Like, what was funny 40 years ago is not necessarily that funny
now. It's still
funny
to Tim.
Well, it could still be funny.
Very clearly, by this conversation.
Like, when you grow up loving comedy and you hear about the cast of SNL in, like, the mid to late 70s, and I know there were some down periods in the early 80s when Lorne Michaels was no longer at the helm, but even, like, the Eddie Murphy episodes. And Eddie Murphy is sort of like a generational talent. Like, he was hilarious on those shows, and that still carries over. But you go back and watch some of the skits that, you know, Aykroyd did or Belushi did.
Like, you're throwing shade at Joe Piscopo?
I'm not necessarily, but it's just like, you know, some of these things that were established funny tropes back then, they kind of pale in comparison, depending on what you sort of look at it, the edge that something can have. Or in the complete opposite direction, like, you go back and look at Richard Pryor when he was on SNL dropping N-bombs. Like, it's just completely different. It's hard to compare these things. And I think SNL specifically is so personalized. It's something that maybe not so much now where you have, I mean, we just spent 10 minutes talking about the various options you have if you want political satire. Like, back in the day, it was you grew up, you probably weren't allowed to watch SNL, so your favorite season is whatever the season you snuck and got to watch by yourself and your parents didn't know. It's like, it's personal, and that's the stuff you remember. Like, I grew up with a cast that I remember at the time people hated. My dad used to tell me all the time how that cast wasn't funny, and it was Tina Fey, Amy Poehler, Will Forte. You know, like, I don't like Fallon, but Fallon was on there too. So it's like,
Chris Kattan.
He sucked.
You didn't like Mango?
Not so much.
Tim did.
I thought that was actually a very funny time.
And it was. But like, again, but you were
the Andy Samberg era too. Like, I don't think we appreciated when we were in it, just how, like, the whole Lonely Island stuff, just how all-time great that was going to be, and that it was going to be gone sooner than later.
But that's three minutes out of a 90-minute show.
If you can have people remembering 3 minutes out of any 90-minute show, you have hit a home run in network television. Are you kidding me?
In fairness, that didn't seem like it was a part of SNL, though.
Like, it seemed above SNL, yeah.
It did. It seemed like it was its own thing off on an island, potentially a lonely island, if you would. But those are the memorable skits, and they are a part of the show. So, yes, it made it better. But when I think of SNL in that period, like, I don't even really think of Andy Samberg really as an SNL kind of guy. Like,
he's never in sketches.
He's not in sketches. Like, he's not doing
Bad Guys, Good Conversation.
He was in Good Guys, Bad Conversation. That's true.
Yeah, again, so, like, I mean, like, that's a classic skit.
There are still established stars from that era. Sudeikis came out of that era. Forte crossed over into that era. You had Maya Rudolph, who's carved out a very nice niche for
herself.
Like, there's always going to be someone who transcends this. And as a society, we're conditioned to always miss the things that we no longer have. Like, it's always going to be, it was funnier back then.
Remember?
Exactly.
I think with the current cast, there's nobody right now that transcends anything.
Kate McKinnon's going to be a star.
McKinnon's really big. And she's
in.
So?
Yeah.
Well, she was already the one positive aspect people pulled out of the Ghostbusters movie.
Oh, wow.
Did you even watch the Ghostbusters movie, Tim?
No.
Yeah, I was going to say.
Yeah, women are funny, okay? Get over it,
Get over it.
No, that was not a movie that was marketed to me, so.
It's actually legitimately terrible.
Is it?
I suspect it would be. Yes. I mean,
it's not funny.
But like, who else? I'm like, I think that Colin Jost and Michael Che are funny.
Yeah, I agree.
I will say they're better than they used to be. They used to be awful at it. They've gotten better. So I give them their.
They're not afraid to give some offside humor.
No, I feel like Cecily Strong's really good too for the role she has.
She was good at the correspondence dinner when she hosted that. But I don't find her all that funny on like a skit to skit basis.
I feel like they have a problem finding people to fill holes, and they have people who are funny. I enjoy Bo Bennett, and I enjoy Kyle Mooney. Like, I think they're funny, and I think they're off the wall.
I hate Kyle Mooney.
I know you do, but
he is the nut low.
I think they put
together
some...
He seems like a guy I would like to just take his head and smash it into
possibly
something.
And look, he had his famous sketch was him being a reporter, and it was like Kyle at whatever. This was like how he got YouTube famous, and interviewing people awkwardly at events, and I did not enjoy that, but I think he and Bo Bennett have very peculiar and odd sensibilities. They come up with a lot of the 10-to-1 sketches, stuff like, I remember there was one with Chris Pratt a couple of years back where it was just this faux sitcom, and just everything about it was like, it was just very well paced. It was weird in the right points. It was produced as such that the episode itself that they were parodying was very poorly edited. It was very similar to that.
The one with John Hamm?
Yeah, the John Hamm.
That was
Hamm
the best
one,
skit
like
of like the past
skit.
10 years.
Exactly. So
Daryl's House.
Or why am I spacing on his name? The Bill Hader puppet sketch, which was also fantastic.
That is fantastic.
With Seth MacFarlane?
Yeah, that is
fantastic.
We're
in Grenada.
It's almost as good as Ben Affleck's impersonation of Keith Olbermann.
That skit is also like 9 minutes long, too.
Yeah, it's
well,
phenomenal.
Olbermann's never been recorded talking for less than 15 minutes.
Yeah, well, that's also true. And it is, you know, that skit is one of the very best because it is just, it's like a slice of life.
I mean, it's a parody of Keith Olbermann, but it does sound exactly, he's just saying things Keith Olbermann is saying.
Yeah,
it's like doing a Trump impression at this point.
Would, yeah.
Doing a Trump impression at this point is just repeating things that Trump has said.
Yeah, you can't parody insanity.
I actually thought that Baldwin was a very uninspired choice.
Really? I actually thought he was pretty good as Trump.
But I think that's a clear indication of what Tim is saying, what Tim is speaking to, how there's no real star of this cast. Like, you had to go out and get an Alec Baldwin for, like, just his it factor. Like,
Eric,
you needed someone.
Eric Baldwin?
But compare the work he did, right? I mean, like, obviously the gold standard for political satire is Tina Fey doing Sarah Palin. Like, she was on a whole other level of funny when it came to that.
I think it's hard to necessarily...
But she also wasn't on the cast when she was doing that. She was on 30 Rock. She came back
right,
and did it.
That is certainly true, but they picked the right person to do the right job. I just don't think... I think Baldwin was an uninspired, sort of warmed-over choice, and I don't... I think he's done a good impression, I suppose, but... Yeah, you know, it has been memorable.
I just think it's a tough spot to be put in as a comedian where, like, I guess Palin sort of checked a lot of these boxes too, but I don't think to the extent that Trump does. But how do you parody Donald Trump? He's a parody of himself. Like, it's hard to make something funny that's already the most outlandish thing ever.
And like, somebody you had on and host like a year ago.
Exactly. And, like, SNL specifically is so much about taking a simple concept or taking a trait or taking a personality I mean, I don't say disorder necessarily, but something about someone's personality and taking it to the nth degree. Trump is already at the nth degree to every part of his being. He's not a person you can parody. Like, I think it was a losing battle for Baldwin.
Yeah, it was like with the Biden stuff. Although Sudeikis didn't really sound like Biden or look like Biden, it felt like Joe Biden.
Because you just get that sort of
Joe
like,
Biden.
Yeah, I was just comfortable.
I think the person playing Hillary is doing a fantastic job.
That's Kate McKinnon.
That's Kate McKinnon.
She is killing it. She's killing it as Hillary Clinton. Hopefully, you know, she's got...
But she was in that terrible Ghostbusters movie I didn't see.
I never said it was terrible. I just said it wasn't marketed to me, so I didn't. I tend not to go see movies that are clearly not marketed to me. You know? Sorry.
But yeah, they have a real problem just assessing talent. Like, even it's sad that
like
we
Pete
got to
Davidson.
A point. I like Pete Davidson a lot, too, but they haven't found a role for him. Basically, Pete Davidson's best skits are, hey, be the guest on Weekend Update and just come on and do some of your stand-up.
Yeah.
Which is fine. He's a really funny guy, and it almost goes to the sort of like they have this weird tendency now to lean on for opening monologues, even if the person who's doing the opening monologue is not necessarily a musically inclined person, Like, 9 times out of 10, it's a fucking song. It's like, stop doing that. So there's times when, like, Louis C.K. comes on and just does a stand-up for 10 minutes, and it's great. Or Chris Rock comes on and just does stand-up for 10 minutes.
Yeah, well, you're not going to get that on the cheap anymore, not for free on SNL. Now he's getting paid $40 million for 2 shows on Netflix.
Yeah. It's not bad.
Is he the biggest stand-up still, or is Kevin Hart the biggest stand-up?
In terms of revenue, it's Kevin Hart.
But Kevin Hart tours. Like, Chris Rock doesn't really tour anymore.
I would say undisputed, just in terms of who is renowned as the best stand-up, it's still Louis C.K.
Yeah, but he also is constantly touring and things like that, and he's releasing new material every year.
Well, I think that's a crucial part to still being relevant in the comedy world.
But Chris Rock comes back and does a set.
Oh, sure. He's hilarious. He's great.
He's still Chris Rock.
Yeah.
And Chris Rock was at the time. It's like, what if Chappelle came back and had a new hour-and-a-half special?
I'm sure it'd be great.
Would that be...
Plus, Chris Rock just hosted the Oscars, which is a far bigger gig than anything Louis C.K. has done.
Yeah, but Louis C.K. is not going to host the Oscars. There's a certain level of sellability with someone's just personality. Like, Chris Rock is someone who can be that guy. Yeah. That'd be worse than James Franco. No, but yes, to that point, like, Pete Davidson, really funny. They don't know what role he's in. They just had, like, Jay Farrow, who was given a long period of time to try to figure this out.
I can't even remember a sketch with Jay
Farrow.
And that's
the thing, because...
Well, he did Obama for a while. He did do Obama.
But he's a great impressionist, like an otherworldly impressionist, but just never really got to show what he had. Like, he became bit characters in a bunch of other sketches. And, you know, this thing works. Like, you have to write your own stuff and generate your own sketches. So I don't know if it was just something on his end where he couldn't get things across to the writers. But, like, he was a talent that never came through. And I feel like that's their big problem right now, is they can't figure out how to utilize their best pieces.
Well, is it because that they don't have an all-purpose guy? Like, Kate McKinnon
Taron Killam was their all-purpose guy. Bobby Moynihan's kind of their all-purpose
guy. Yeah, but he's not funny.
I like Bobby Moynihan.
He's fine, but he's like Horatio Sanz. He's like, he's not funny. He's just a fat guy.
But yeah,
he fills the fat guy quotient.
And they've got someone like Kenan Thompson on there, who's clearly outstayed his welcome.
Yeah, but he still does.
And he's just hanging on.
What's up with that?
What's up with that? I'm in on Knuckle Puck. Like, Knuckle Puck and me are good for life.
Yeah, but he should have left that show 3 years ago.
Yeah, but
what's he going
to
do?
Yeah, what's Kenan Thompson up to?
That's a problem.
But like Bill,
no, but that's like who actually does the voiceover work now? It's he was on the show forever.
Daryl Hammond.
Like, Daryl Hammond should have left a long time ago too. He was there for like 12 seasons.
He did leave, and then
but he still
just
keeps
back to...
coming back.
Well, you know,
and I'm not saying that's a bad thing, but like, much like Kenan Thompson, like, Kenan doesn't have anything after this. Like, he's gonna try to. This is like when you play for the Spurs and you try to latch on to Popovich and be an assistant coach after your career's
over. If they wanted
to,
like, develop What Up with that into a show, I think that could actually really work.
But you need Sudeikis.
You would watch it, just do a dance. But, like, Sudeikis and Hader at the same time, well, both really good talents. They were all-purpose guys. They could be the guy in the background of a sketch. They could be the lead of the sketch. They could be the serious role in the sketch.
But I think, again,
they could be the outrageous. They don't have that person.
Bill Hader was probably someone who no one ever predicted would be a star, someone able to carry his own vehicle. Same with Will Forte, because of the way they were utilized in SNL. And again, not saying that was the wrong role for them for SNL. But again, once you leave SNL and kind of are just privy to do whatever you want, that's when Will Forte has his own show. That's when... You know, Bill Hader becomes a legitimate sort of
dramatic actor
slash possible movie star.
Or like, Jimmy Fallon hosts the biggest show on nighttime TV.
Let's not talk about fucking Fallon. He's so bad.
No, I don't think so. I think he's actually pretty funny.
Here's the problem with Fallon.
I like his humor because he doesn't take cheap shots.
Well, he's too clean.
He's incapable of taking a cheap shot at anyone.
He has to please everyone.
You know? Yeah, but there's enough dirty comedy out there in the world that every now and then I like a little bit of wholesome comedy.
You're on network television. There's only so far you can be dirty, but, like, you don't have to be the cleanest guy in the world. You don't have to be friends with every celebrity who comes on your show.
Oh, I don't mind it. I think he's pretty good. I think he's getting better.
I just think that, like, a guy like James Corden, who does a very similar shtick, but
I've never seen the James Corden show.
That's fine.
I've only ever seen him doing the driving thing.
I think it just comes from a genuine place for him. Like, I think he's actually sort of the guy he portrays himself to be on his show. Fallon is not that dude. Like, it comes across very fake to me, and I think it's very see-through.
Oh, I watched Conan for the first time in, like, 6 years the other night. He looks old.
Yeah, he does.
Well, he is old.
When you have, like, 8 centimeters of forehead, or 8 inches of forehead.
It's going to be tough.
It's going to be tough.
Miss Conan being on TV, like, in his prime.
There was a nice article in The Ringer, sort of, I think it was their theme week. It was a things happening, like, in front of our noses under the radar sort of thing. And someone was writing about how Conan has been on TBS now for, like, 6-7 years.
Oh, my God. Remember
when
he left?
Which seems kind of crazy.
Remember how big of a deal it was?
And that was the thing. It was, like, it was headline news. It was the biggest deal in the world now.
Because it was The Tonight Show. Nothing in the world matters as much as the Tonight Show does.
But it was a very interesting article in the sense
that... Does the Tonight Show really even matter anymore?
It's the number one show in comedy, and it always will be. It is the...
What is the metric you're using for that?
Yeah.
Nostalgia?
I think it still does the best ratings every single night. And
of those shows, probably.
Of all those comedy shows, and it's been around since the 1950s. It's like the Meet the Press or whatever of comedy. It's that top cut that just can't be replaced because it, by definition, is irreplaceable.
I don't know who it's appealing to.
I'm just saying...
I watch it.
Yeah, but that's surprising, actually, that you would enjoy The Tonight Show.
No, I won't. Yeah,
I feel like it's more... I feel like it's directly aimed at like a weird millennial audience that likes to ingest things in 5-7-minute segments.
Tim was also really big on Leno over Letterman.
I always thought Leno was funny.
I know, but that's...
Because Leno wasn't mean. Leno could be really funny without being needlessly mean. There's lots of places I can go for mean, dark comedy. I don't really... need to turn to late night comedy. I want some good, clean, wholesome laughs.
Tim just wants to remember when comedy wasn't mean.
Listen, if there were member berries, I would take them. You know, there's a real nostalgia to watching the Tonight Show for me that I connect to.
Well, I think that the one thing this article is pointing out though is that Conan is the only remaining sort of late night host purist, if you want to put it that
from
way,
from that era.
From that era, where it's like. He's going to come on, he's going to do a monologue, he's going to have some sort of, like, zany thing he does with Andy for, like, 5-10 minutes to fill. They might have, like, some sort of thing they shot in the studio.
Yeah.
Then he'll have his guest, a musician or a comedian, and the show's over. It's like he's not really pandering, and I'm not saying it's wrong. Like, look, we work in an industry, and we do it too. Chop up your videos into 2-3 minutes, have them be ingestible. But, like...
You don't think we're going to get that impression thing of Mikey coming in?
Of course we are. That's going to be on Twitter.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I get it, but it is sort of nice. And Tim, I feel like you would almost respect this with what you're talking about. Like, there's a certain simplicity and safety in turning on Conan and just being like, oh, this feels like a 90s talk show.
Yeah, don't get me wrong. I liked Conan. I thought the 9 months or so he had the Tonight Show, he was funny. I thought he was funny. Again, I don't think Conan takes cheap shots either. I think Conan's zany, and I think he has some like really wild stuff, but he's not mean. And that's
who's
what I like
mean in your opinion?
Like, David Letterman was very mean.
Yeah, he was. Yeah. He was.
No, and
Letterman
was great.
But he softened his last decade or so.
In some ways he has. In some ways he could get real. I mean, anyway, we don't need to go down the...
He's got a fluffy beard. Makes him look like
now
Santa.
Now he does look like Santa Claus. But, so yeah, he was mean. I didn't care for that. And, you know, I was afraid Colbert was going to be too, but he hasn't nearly been as acid. That's one of the reasons I don't like Jimmy Kimmel so much. I think Jimmy Kimmel can be mean.
Oh, really? See, I really appreciate Jimmy Kimmel's meanness.
Yeah,
he's just being a sarcastic asshole.
But the problem is he's not as mean as you know he could be. Because you go back and listen to his stuff with Carolla, he's got a whole other level that he's not using for like...
Yeah, he's really...
And that's why I can't watch Kimmel. Because I'm like, I enjoy the mean version of you. This is like a toned-down version. Like, oh, you're mean to your kids and they whine about their Halloween candy. Ah, that's so funny.
I like Kimmel.
I think there's a room.
Out of all the late-night guys Kimmel is my favorite guy.
I don't like his show.
I think there's lots of room for comedy like that, and I think occasionally it's funny. But there are times that I, you know, after the day, or a long day, just want to relax with some funny but not, you know, dark jokes, and that's just how I feel. When I do, I certainly gravitate towards Fallon, because I think he's getting really good at his job.
I'll say, too, like, I'm someone who...
Can I say
I don't watch late-night television.
Neither do I, but I just don't like Jimmy Fallon.
No.
Like, I see him, and I haven't... Like, that Kyle Mooney guy. I see him, I have an adverse reaction.
And
I don't like him.
And that's fair. I'm on that boat with you. But I also just, like, I don't like these shows, because I don't really care about the celebrity guests. Like, basically, half of the show, I don't really care about. I'll watch the monologue, maybe.
And, listen, if the monologue was so good, you'd see it the next day on Twitter.
And
well,
that's
I'm
the
not,
thing, too. That's,
I like
that's
the
place we're at.
That's always been my favorite part. I think that's the most, because that's the...
You're so canned and contrived.
Do you really like Jimmy Fallon because you both share gig fits?
Jimmy Fallon does have some authentic laughs and stuff like that.
Because he's laughing at his own terrible jokes.
Oh, they're not terrible. Give the
they're
guy a break.
Pretty bad.
You know, I like the interview. Plus, I like musical guests. I get to hear bands or songs that I otherwise would not come across in my daily life. I get to hear on the show, which I enjoy.
Have you heard of this band Radiohead? I think they're up and coming. I heard them on Fallon last night.
Yeah. But listen, a lot of people are like me in that they consume popular culture and music through things
and most of those people are above 55.
That's not most.
You are 20 years younger than the demographic you're talking about.
Oh, I don't think that's true. I think I'm right
just
because
you don't think it's true doesn't make it not true.
I'm right in that demographic. Let's I'm right in that age.
You're not. You're younger than me.
Yeah.
And you're older than Gary. You're between us in age. Think about how me and everyone I know and you and everyone you know, not just people that work here, your friends in day-to-day life, how they consume media and everything else. Does that match anything to what Tim is talking about?
No.
Do you know anyone who does that besides Tim?
No.
No.
I'd like to think that I consume media in a very eclectic way, in both very incredibly modern ways, listening to podcasts, stuff like that, in incredibly old ways, reading newspapers, watching network television, and then mixtures of the two on the internet. I think I have I was lucky to have been born at the end of something and at the beginning of something, where I get to straddle, and Pat does too, both worlds of both modern media and old media, and I think I'm better off for it.
I just don't really consume old media at all. The fact that I got cable back after not having it for 5 years seemed like a really old-timey move.
But things are moving, away from... I mean, for example, the last year was the first year that paper books outsold electronic books.
Yeah, it's like you can go to the... It's almost speaking to the point that everything is becoming so niche. Because, like, vinyl records are, like, big again. You can go... And there are stores dedicated to buying vinyl records, although that makes no sense.
I think music sounds better on vinyl.
Why? Because that's how it was in 1960, and you want to remember?
No, I just like the way the sound of vinyl is. I think it's more an authentic listening experience. But books are the same way. Anyone who's owned a Kindle, and I have, or read a book on an iPad, compared to reading one by holding the book in your hands, it's no contest.
I agree with that. I find my eyes get strained when I try to read it on an iPad.
I find it the same way for me with a newspaper. I prefer to lean back and hold the paper in my hands.
Reading the newspaper because everything I'm reading is out of date.
Oh, that's not true. Like opinion pieces and the stuff that's really interesting in newspapers.
You can read those online anyway.
Well, not always. Sometimes there are paywalls, so you can't. And
if you don't know how to get around paywalls, you're not really the age you say you are. You actually are 55.
I have no idea how to get around.
Yeah, I know you don't. You also didn't. It took you over 4 years to figure out how to screenshot something on your phone, and the fact that Googling it never occurred to you.
No, it didn't occur to me. It does
he had
now.
To go ask Jeeves.
Jeeves has the answers. He's like the hat.
She just asked the hat.
Maybe that's what we'll do next week. We'll turn into a magic eight ball.
Tim gets to ask the hat three questions.
All right, we got to get out of here. That'll do it on the Pat Mayo Hour. Gary and Thorne, follow him on Twitter at Gary and Thorne. Of course, you can always follow on Twitter and just in day-to-day life because he might be lurking around. It is Tim and August.
Tim and August.
Not my name.
Oh, yeah, your name, pal.
Not my Twitter account.
What's your Twitter account then? See, he was waiting for it.
I have it written down. Don't fall into his trap. It's been a couple of weeks.
I hadn't even occurred to me.
No.
And I wasn't even setting it up. But it's funny to hear him pause. How many times do you pause during the show just to make sure that that's not the case?
When I've thought about it in advance and written it down in advance, once or twice.
Yeah, but how often do you think of it in advance? It doesn't matter how many times you think of it in advance, because only once were you ever able to curb it, Tim. Sorry, pal.
I guess there's only really one practical question left to ask at this point.
Do we still play Stonehenge? I'm Pat Mayo. You can follow me on Twitter at @ThePME. And remember to subscribe to the Pat Mayo Hour on YouTube and iTunes. And you can listen to more Tim Geek Fits. I'll see you next time.